Hey, everybody, it's on the Charlie Kirk Show, a trucker convoy update. Also, what's going on in Georgia with the voting election law changes? And finally, my friend Jackie Deason unpacks for us how American energy policy directly impacts Vladimir Putin, a unique wrinkle that we have not covered at all, and she does a wonderful job. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. If you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. Enjoy this episode. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. New poll is out here. Do Americans want to go to war with Russia? Do they want involvement? So Biden is going all in. He's going all in that he's going to get a big poll boost by this. Only 26% of Americans want the United States to play a major role in Russia-Ukrainian conflict. Just 26% of Americans say that the United States should have a major role. 52% say that we should have a minor role, while 20% say that we should have no role at all. So 72% of Americans want a minor or no role at all in what's happening in Ukraine and Russia. You wouldn't know that if you watched the nightly news. It seems as if it's the number one issue happening on the minds of Americans. Meanwhile, there's much more important things happening than what's happening. It's a border dispute in far Eastern Europe. And one of the things that I think is most important about this poll as it comes out here is we're starting to see Americans not fall victim into the media industrial complex's trap. Now, this new poll that was done by the Associated Press and NROC Center for Public Affairs Research shows that Americans are much more worried about inflation, gas prices, than they are worried about Russia or Ukraine. Americans were also found of an increasing level of concern regarding the state of the American economy. And U.S. officials warned that Russian forces could attack at any time. Yeah, of course they attack, as if they're going to attack America, right? So let's go to some sound here. Let's go to cut 30.
As we respond, my administration is using every tool at our disposal to protect American businesses and consumers from rising prices at the pump. As I said last week, defending freedom will have cost for us as well and here at home.
Now, almost no mention in Biden's speech yesterday of what's happening in Canada. And we said yesterday that Canada has been a dry rehearsal, almost a dress rehearsal or a dry run of what's to come here in America soon. Play cut 40 of Neil Parmenter, president and CEO of the Canadian Bankers Association, that says Canada's banks are perfectly situated to help lead the creation of a federated digital ID system between the government and the private sector. The World Economic Forum agrees. Play cut 40.
Canada's banks are perfectly situated to help lead the creation of a federated digital ID system between government and the private sector. The World Economic Forum agrees that banks and financial institutions should lead the path forward for digital ID. Banks are highly regulated and trusted. It would have the power and security to store every Canadian's electronic identity and attributes. And it would unlock countless opportunities for Canadians to verify who they are safely, quickly, and securely.
That's interesting. So they want like voter ID? Is that what they want now? I don't think so. I thought it's racist to even recommend voter ID. No, instead, they want the ability to shut off your bank account overnight. In fact, they want the surveillance power on a permanent basis. Play cut 23. This is what's happening in Canada. Chrystia Freeland, a disciple of the World Economic Forum.
As of today, all crowdfunding platforms and the payment service providers they use must register with FinTrack. We are making these changes because we know that these platforms are being used to support illegal blockades and illegal activity. The government will also bring forward legislation to provide these authorities to FinTrack on a permanent basis.
On a permanent basis. They're not going to give up power. They are going to continue to regulate the banking transactions and the flow of money regardless of whether or not there's an emergency. Oh, wait, the emergency is actually not going to be over. And Trudeau said that. Play cut 22.
But even though the blockades are lifted across border openings right now, even though things seem to be resolving very well in Ottawa, this state of emergency is not over.
One of the characteristics of a tyrant is they need to be able to organize the people in their country. They need to know who is loyal to them and who is disloyal to them. Now, one of the ways they do that is through something called a social credit score. Social credit scores exist in China. They used to exist in a much more informal, non-technological basis in Stalin's Russia. They existed in the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany. They existed in Benito Mussolini's Italy, Pol Pot's Cambodia. A social credit score is basically the ability for the government to see how obedient or compliant. I'm just going to say right now, I would have I'd be bankrupt social credit score with this current regime. I would be very low, negative. And however, someone like Rachel Maddow, she would have a very high social credit score. She wears her two masks when she showers. She does whatever she needs to do, right? She's very compliant, very loyal. She listens to the regime. And she says what the regime wants to hear. I mean, she communicates it. But a social credit score is one of the ways that they're going to control your financial transactions. So the question always needs to be is, well, who's doing the judgment of the social credit score? Well, in Canada, the new social credit score is that we're going to have unlimited power and that we are not going to disclose in any way, shape, or form that we're able to shut off all of your ability to move your money in Canada, even though you might disagree, even though you might be doing absolutely, completely, and totally nothing wrong. Now, this is all designed, as it says in the video, by the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum meets in Davos. They are the globalist coalition that comes together and is focused completely and totally on trying to deteriorate sovereignty and borders and create a one-world-style government. Now, the cabinet minister, he dodged questions on Trudeau's ties to the World Economic Forum. Play cut 21.
Klaus Schwab is the head of the World Economic Forum, and he bragged how his subversive WEF, World Economic Forum, has, quoted, infiltrated governments around the world. He said that his organization had penetrated more than half of Canada's cabinet. My concern is the deputy.
Order. I know the member was in a really good question there, but the audio is really, really bad, and the video is really, really bad as well.
Oh, yeah, the audio and the video. I actually heard it perfectly. That guy's a typical tyrant. Now, but don't worry, everybody. Justin Trudeau is coming out, and he's saying, we are going to stand against authoritarianism. Can you imagine the lack of self-awareness where you declare martial law on your citizens and then you have the spine to come out and say, oh, yeah, by the way, we hate authoritarianism? For Media Matters watching at home, I am much more concerned about what Justin Trudeau has done in the last week than what Vladimir Putin has done in the last week. It's not to say I'm not concerned. I don't support what Putin is doing. That's not what I'm saying. But Trudeau is a neighbor to the north. It's a formerly Western country. It's supposed to be a democracy. Russia doesn't pretend to be like a Western democracy. They're a ancestral kind of like fake democracy dictatorship, and everyone knows it, okay? Trudeau pretends to be a democracy, pretends to be an ally of the United States. But Trudeau says, you know what? We're not going to stand for authoritarianism. And if you disagree with me, I'm going to run you over the horse. Play cut 39.
Canada and our allies will defend democracy. We are taking these actions today to stand against authoritarianism. The people of Ukraine, like all people, must be free to determine their own future. We will continue working with our international partners to safeguard Ukraine's territorial integrity and prevent further Russian aggression.
Yeah, we hate aggression from strong men. By the way, your bank account's gone because you have a bad social credit score. He's not dumb. He knows what he's saying. He just doesn't think you care. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Iron Man thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted only $19.95. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now, ReliefFactor.com. You should order the 3-week quick start too, discount only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Check it out right now. We do not give financial advice here. But I think this is really important because this is happening quietly, and if this was happening under a different president, it would be the top story. S&P 500 slips into correction off 10% from its January high. That happened quickly, didn't it? Stocks dropped in a volatile trading session that pushed the S&P 500 into correction territory. The threat of war has become the latest wild card for investors who are already concerned with supply chain disruptions, rapidly rising inflation, and central banks' plan to tighten monetary policy. I'm reading for the Wall Street Journal. The S&P 500 declined 44 points the other day, leaving the index down more than 10% from its January 3rd high mark. Stocks, which were near their session lows during Biden's speech outlining the sanctions, recouped a chunk of their declines. Market is down, inflation is up, gas prices are up, all to be expected when you inflate your currency and there's not correlating value alongside of it. And one of the groups that is feeling that economic anxiety, and quite honestly, one of the reasons why the trucker convoy is happening is because they know that they're about to be displaced by technology. They know it. They know that in 20 years, if the tyrants get their way and the technological kind of puppet masters get their way, there will be no truckers. They'll all be autonomous vehicles. Now, I think that might be an interesting thought experiment to have, but also, what are you going to do with all these people that are working for a living? No one's actually been able to answer that question. That's the underlying anxiety of the trucker convoy. It's a lot bigger, a lot deeper, a lot more complicated than just mandates. It's an industry that knows they're about to become obsolete, and they're trying to draw attention to how integral they are and how hard they've worked to actually keep the American economy alive. Play cut 44.
Sir, the world is watching us because they know that if what's happening in Canada happens to us here in the land of the free, then freedom as we know it is gone. So we are leaving the choice to you. The decision is in your hands. This whole convoy, this whole assembly on the National Mall, it doesn't even have to happen if you just end things now and we can get on with our lives.
Play cut 43, convoy organizer Kyle Sepcich with a message for Biden. Play cut 43.
This message is for the President of the United States of America. We are very organized and our routes are public. I even pulled a permit for the National Mall to be respectful. We are coming peacefully. And we're going to do this lawfully and constitutionally. I want the rest of the world to know our plans so that there's no twisting and lying about who and what we are. I'm coming to you as a father, a small business owner who's unaffiliated to any parties. We just want government overreach to end. On behalf of Freedom Convoy USA 2022, we are asking you to end the state of emergency, end the mandates once and for all.
That's correct. So what do I mean by that's correct? That's a specific ask. Part of the problem with this convoy, as I've talked to some of the truckers, is they're like, oh yeah, we just kind of want things to change. You got to be very specific. If you're going to do civil disobedience and do it so peacefully, you have to know what you want. It just can't be we're kind of upset. We're doing a world tour across the continent. It's not the way it works. Cut 42, shorter clip. American trucker says you cannot have rights without freedom, and you cannot have freedom without rights. Play cut 42.
Have rights without freedom, and you can't have freedom without rights. And our government, unfortunately, is just chiseling away at all of them.
That's exactly right. They are. Look, did you get hit with a big tax bill you were not expecting? With rates still being very low and home equity being high, it's the perfect time to refinance and get some cash out of your home. Look, you could go to one of these woke banks, Citibank, Chase, where they hate you, they hate the country, and they hate Christianity. Or you could refinance right now all of your mortgage needs with my friends. Guess what? It's so easy to remember the website, andrewandtodd.com. Just write it now, andrewandtodd.com. There was Sierra Pacific Mortgage. They're people I know and trust and work with them, and you should too. Just go to andrewandtodd.com. It takes 30 seconds to answer a couple of questions. This gives them the information they need to give you valuable information, often on the first call. Andrew and Todd, they are not brokers. They are bankers, which means they handle your loan from start to finish, so you always have someone in your corner. Take that first step towards getting that cash you need today. andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com, or call 888-888-1172, 888-888-1172. Do not use the banks that hate you. Use Andrew and Todd. They will do a great job for you, everybody. andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com. What is going on when it comes to the energy fight and how it connects to geopolitics? With us is Jackie Deason, a friend of mine and an expert on all things energy. Jackie, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Great to see you today, Charlie. Good afternoon.
Great to see you too. So tell us, how does the Biden's regime war on American energy exploration, how does that actually tie into what we're seeing 5,000 miles away in Ukraine?
Well, you have to know that Russia is a petrostate. That means it relies on oil and gas for its revenues to make its budget, its much of its exports. And so as the price of oil and gas goes up and down, so the Russian regime goes up or down. It's a really big deal to them, which is very different than us. We're only about 8% of our economy is fossil fuels, even though the fossil fuels factor into just about every other sector of the economy, obviously, as the foundational input. But Putin cannot misbehave or even keep the regime alive and avoid state failure if he doesn't have the right price for each barrel of oil and each unit of natural gas. So our producers here in America are his biggest competitors. When we produce heavily, we flood the globe with supply, the price goes down. This takes money out of Putin's pocket. Right now, the prices are high. Part of the reason is that the Biden family has aided and abetted oil and gas around the world, in Ukraine, in China, and made billions. At the same time, Joe Biden has warred against American fossil fuels every way he can to restrict the supply, which is why we're almost back up to $100 a barrel. That's great for Putin. That gives him money, which he has to have to fight a war. Wars are expensive. You need a lot of money. You need a lot of diesel fuel. He has both now because of Biden's policies. Total reversal from Trump.
Yeah, I remember we had a guest on about a couple of years ago, someone you would know, Harold Hamm, who's a good man. He's a great person, one of the original Wildcatters. And he was concerned oil was too cheap under Trump.
Yes.
He said that it was going to put producers up. Can you just, Jackie, walk us through that? 2 years ago, there was a real movement about potentially the Russians and the Saudis playing a bloodletting strategy against Americans, right? Now it's the exact opposite. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the issue is that American producers, shale producers who frack, have a very expensive price per barrel to get that oil out of the ground. The Russians and most OPEC countries do not. Their lifting cost is cheap. Therefore, they can produce at a very low price and still make money. American frackers cannot. So we need about 50 to 60 barrels or dollars a barrel to make money and have a healthy U.S. production environment where the investors know they're going to make their money back. That's a disadvantage that we have. Knowing that, the OPEC Plus, which is 13 countries plus Russia, essentially, we believe, colluded to flood the world with oil, bring down the price, and put the frackers out of business because they could not make money at the same price that OPEC and Russia can. So that went on for a while. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened, or COVID policy happened. And when the lockdowns went into effect, people didn't need as much gasoline. They didn't need as much oil and gas to run the economy. And that killed the price. So that, too, was a death shot to American frackers. But I think the biggest threat right now is actually Biden's ESG policies. Bottom line, this is, you know, a move by Wall Street and the government to divest from American fossil fuels on the basis that it's green. Well, if you can't get capital, you can't operate. It is starving the U.S. oil patch, which is why prices are as high as they are right now. If the ESG policies would stop, and the other problems like opposing pipelines, opposing leasing on federal lands, opposing fracking, opposing production offshore on federal land, there are a lot of problems. Trump was the opposite on all of those. So American oil and gas can hit the accelerator totally. And we'd have a completely different oil price right now if Biden would back off and adopt the Trump policies. Gasoline would go way down. The cost of everything would go way down because the cost of oil and gas is built into every product you buy. I challenge anyone to name a product you buy that either isn't made from oil and gas or transported with oil and gas, or there's electricity from natural gas used to make the product and sell the product. You can't name it. And Putin would have his revenues slashed if American producers, who are the number one, we're the top country in the world when times are good, when the government's not restricting our production. Putin would not be able to wage war right now if Trump were in office because he wouldn't have the money.
That's exactly period. Right. Well, and yeah. What's so interesting about your analysis is that American frackers were attacked from both low and high prices. Now, the high prices, they're not getting attacked by as much, but they are getting attacked by the policies that led to the high prices. This is a really important point. So I want to dive into this for a second, Jackie, which is fracking is an existential threat to the Saudi Arabias and the Irans and to the Russians, because it empowers entrepreneurial, highly technological engineering technology to be able to extract otherwise, let's say, dormant oil and natural gas reserves. You just wouldn't be able to get every part from the reservoir. But fracking allows you to go to places that otherwise you'd think, oh, we already drilled that well. Well, maybe you didn't, actually, because you could go through it horizontally. Talk about the technology of fracking, and then talk about how what we're seeing unfold here is like a relentless campaign to destroy the American energy entrepreneur, basically.
So imagine back in 2005, the Federal Reserve Chair Alan Greenspan told Congress, we have a natural gas crisis in this country. We don't have enough natural gas, even though this country sits on an ocean of natural gas. The problem was we couldn't get to it economically, as you just alluded to. We didn't have the fracking revolution come along yet, and which is really a technological revolution. It was innovation, changing how we get the natural gas out of the ground, oil as well. And it took us from producing about 5 million barrels a day of oil to, you know, 8, 9, 10 million barrels a day. And then Harold Hamm says we could go up to 15 million barrels a day. Well, the Saudis and the Russians are at about 10 million barrels a day over time average. So if you bring another player on to the world stage with fracking that brings on that much supply, it really has a hard to appreciate impact worldwide on the price. It destroys the oligarchs' budgets. Yes. I mean, they go broke. They go broke. They cannot sustain their countries. I mean, if you can see it laid out, the Wall Street Journal does this. Like, okay, Russia needs like $100 oil just to make their budget. Saudi Arabia is a little better. Libya is like $287 a barrel. They can't make it if we're fracking. That is the bottom line. The biggest state sponsors of terrorism and sponsors of warfare cannot survive if we're fracking. That's how important it is. And so when you watch Biden come in and put the chokehold onto the oil patch, it shouldn't be surprising that the price skyrockets. You're paying more for gasoline. You're paying more for your electric bill because natural gas is so expensive.
Yes.
I mean, just the many, many, many bad effects of taking aim at the U.S. oil patch are worldwide. It's war.
It totally is. Yes. And so now the frackers have been squeezed from both sides. And we also have a different component that is a big threat, is we allow private ownership of minerals, the only major country that allows that. Talk a little bit about that. That alone is an existential threat to an oligarch that has to pay, you know, the bag man and the politician. I mean, it's just inherently super corrupt.
Yeah, I mean, some people think that the oligarchs have the advantage because they can turn their economy on a dime, as Trudeau said, as he admired them, and they can unilaterally make their own policy. Whereas in this country, Joe Biden doesn't tell the millions of Americans who own minerals and own oil companies what they will or will not do. So he just said that he could. I don't know if you've seen his statements lately. He's begged OPEC to produce more, to bring the prices down. And now he's begging our people, which is kind of interesting. He has no authority to control how much oil or gas we produce. We produce based on incentives. What is the price? If the price is high, people put their money there.
Yep.
If it's not high, they put it somewhere else. It just works like that here. We don't have, you know, millions of royalty owners coming together and asking what is in the U.S. best interest. And that's what we'll do. That's how other countries work. But here it's a matter of profit. That is all. And so Biden cannot control them on state lands. He can only control federal lands. And so thank God for that in a sense, because we have some control no matter who's in the White House, which is great.
The concern is obviously the federal lands, the transportation of it, right? The exporting, the pipelines, all those things, you know, play into it. And then I want to, I meant to kind of ask you about this, which was such a smart point, the ESG, which stands for Environmental Sustainable Governance. So let's pretend that you are, you know, Continental Resources, or you, let's just say you're a wildcatter out in Midland, Texas, a place you know very well. And you're like, okay, I'm an entrepreneur. Price of oil is at $85 a barrel. Good luck getting financing. Is that right?
Correct. So what happened is maybe 5 years ago, you could definitely get financing. And then you have now the World Economic Forum pushing out this ESG strategy. It's basically a social credit system. So the E is for environment. That's where it hurts the oil patch, where, you know, the incentives are to invest in green technologies as opposed to traditional fuels that actually work around the clock. But at the same time, it's all the woke stuff. So the social is, you know, diversity on a board, for example, or governance. Also, how do you run your company? Do you support things that are, supported by the regime or opposed by the regime? Do you support the Georgia election law reform or not? Right. So this is where ESG comes in. It's all about wokeness. And it's really a social credit system. And so the oil producers must have money. Most of them go to Wall Street and to institutional investors to get their cash to drill.
Yeah.
Some of them can actually get private money. Now, if you can do that, you're a billionaire. You can afford to fund your own operations. That's great. But a lot of them can't.
That's right.
So this is the deal. They're totally at the mercy of Wall Street most of the time.
If you haven't heard, the world premiere of Daily Wire's Shut-In has reached over 500,000 views. That's more than a Don Lemon episode and currently has an audience score of 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. The Daily Wire worked night and day not just to make this film, but to make it one worth watching, and they did. While being directed by DJ Caruso, The Daily Wire produced a film, and it's really, really good. The film is now exclusively streaming for Daily Wire members, and if you're not one, then you're missing out. Support conservatives making movies, support movies without a woke agenda, and support The Daily Wire and head to dailywire.com/subscribe. dailywire.com/subscribe and get a membership today. Use code CHARLIE for 25% off your new membership. The Daily Wire has some great friends of mine, Candace, Ben, Michael Knowles, Matt Walsh, and more. dailywire.com/subscribe, promo code CHARLIE. And this might be their first original production, but it will not be their last. The Daily Wire also released a new trailer for Hyper Ions, the anti-superhero movie starring Carrie Elves, which comes out in a few weeks. Terror on the Prairie, our new Western, starring the uncancelable Gina Carano, coming this summer. So check it out right now, dailywire.com/subscribe. Use promo code CHARLIE for 25% off. Jackie, tell us about your role, what happened in Georgia, and what's the latest?
Okay, so in Georgia, I was a volunteer for Donald Trump on his legal team. And you might recall the video where you saw one of the election workers pulling ballots out from under a table and scanning them multiple times after the press and Republican observers had left the room, after officials had told the press and observers that counting was finished for the night, it would begin again at 8:30 in the morning. In fact, in the state of Georgia, by law, they're required to hold open all proceedings to the public. So that was all unlawful. There were many other laws broken, but I won't go into all of that. I just want you to know that the fight continues in Georgia, and it has really heated up. No one is covering this. Among other things, there was a lawsuit by voters and Voter Georgia, a nonprofit, to inspect those ballots that you see on that video. They brought in a forensic auditor from Ernst & Young who found a 21% error rate in the scanning of the ballots. 21% error rate, Fulton County ballots. That's 147,000 ballots, I believe, he looked at. So then David Perdue, who ran for Senate, you'll remember, and barely lost, files his own lawsuit, also seeking to review those ballots because they didn't get to do a good forensic review to see if the ballots were legitimate. They simply scanned them and looked at their results and could see that there were thousands of ballots that had been scanned multiple times and things like that. That is in plain view on the Secretary of State's website. You can see the duplicate ballots right there. So then there was a person who's just a private citizen sent a report to Governor Kemp showing 36 categories of irregularity with those ballots. Kemp sent a report to the Georgia State Board of Elections saying, my staff has spent weeks going over this. We cannot reconcile all these irregularities. Can you? And he said, I'm not asking you to change the results of the election, but you've got Governor Kemp now on record, and Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, has opened his very own investigation because he had no choice. A group here in Texas called True the Vote in Houston did an open records request of all kinds of video of those drop boxes and found over 200 people making over 5,000 deposits in the group between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. And that is ballot harvesting, which is illegal in Georgia. They're dropping multiple ballots into these drop boxes at a time. In Georgia, you can only drop your own ballot. What were all these other ballots? And those are likely the ballots that you saw on the video. And this is actually coming out in a movie that Dinesh D'Souza is releasing. You probably heard about it.
2,000 Mules.
Yeah. So the Secretary of State is now investigating that and almost apologizing for doing so. He's like, well, we can't just let this lie there. Like, he's apologizing for doing his job over a year too late.
So where do you think this all ends up in Georgia? We have elections coming up in just a couple months.
I think the first thing you'll see is that Georgians will take this election seriously and take it into their own hands. Rather than trusting the Secretary of State or the police department to investigate or the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, I think you're going to see what you saw in Virginia with Youngkin for the first time. Republicans got their act together and actually staffed each precinct and had teams in each county who were ready to respond where there were reports of irregularity or people being threatened or whatever it was. And just having sets of eyes on the process, participating and showing up is a big part of it. I can tell you I've lived in 8 states and I've never seen that before. Typically, Democrats staff them all. Republicans staff like 25%. So I think that for the first time, Georgians' eyes are opened, and I think you'll see Brad Raffensperger be unelected.
I mean, at the very least, right? There's other changes that need to happen. So, well, Jackie, thank you so much for covering that. You've done such a great job, and we're going to have you back on soon. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Say when. Good to see you, Charlie.
Thanks. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.